recording before. Cool. That's definitely us recording, Siri. Okay, cool. Give me one second. Let's let the otter start recording. Hey, everybody. So we're just in the last session, we had a thing where the otter autopilot, which is great. We've got about 20 in this meeting. But it basically takes over the recording. So we didn't have one, so we just needed to figure it out. So for the last session, unfortunately, we didn't have it. We've got a voice transcript, but not a full kind of video recording, sadly. But hopefully we'll have one for today, and we're going to re-record some of the other ones as well. Ola, are you in charge of sharing the screen? Cool. We'll give everyone a few minutes to kind of come in, and then we'll get started. The scroll to cover today. I wanted to talk through again just some kind of examples of practical AI tools, but then I wanted to dive in a little bit into some problems people are facing and just share some kind of key concepts with people. It's just I can see people dripping in, so we'll maybe wait a little bit longer. We'll try and do it last week, so I'll talk a little bit, then we'll open up for questions, and I'll talk a little bit more. And then again, we'll open it up for questions and then share some kind of hints of what we're going to discuss next week. As I mentioned at the start, we are planning on taking a lot of these pieces and recording them so people can watch them at their leisure. So that will be coming over the summer, just because we realize there's quite a lot of content in here, and having it so people can watch it at their own pace seems quite sensible. Okay, next slide, please. So today I just wanted to do a little bit of a recap from last time where we shared some of the headline kind of principles on AI. And I feel we should never be ashamed to go back and just remind ourselves what AI is, because I always say this, the more we know what it is and what it does, the more we know where it can be used sensibly, safely, and ethically as well. I wanted to just explain a couple of key concepts because I realized that in the last few weeks, there's a lot of words and terminology get thrown around, which depending on our kind of institutional background and training to date, we might interpret a bit differently. So benchmarking is one, which has got its own specialist term, but also training data is something else, which I think we talk about. And usually when people hear data in education, they think of, enrollment data or learning data or gender parity rates and other such things, and it's a lot wider. So I wanted to talk through that. I wanted to just share some kind of the innovations that we've been finding. One of the things we realized is we need to go back and update our mapping of all this stuff and cross-reference it against the categories, just because, as we've discussed before, AI is such a general purpose technology that we're seeing use cases emerging across many, many tasks as well. So it's a constant kind of stream of things coming in. We need to go back and update. I wanted to talk in a bit more detail about not just the language and text creation parts of AI, but also the voice AI applications, because I think this is something where there's a lot of potential, especially around marking, but also for children with disabilities as well, so with visual impairments and other things. So we're seeing a lot of innovation there. I wanted to just spend a bit of time talking about that. Then I wanted to essentially just reflect and say, like, these systems are great, they honestly are, but there's still challenges, and share some of the challenges which people have been finding in the last year or 18 months of building with these, and also some solutions as well. So one of the things I realized is, especially for policymakers, when people turn up and describe their model to you, they're using some terminology in terms of how they get the old content in, how they deal with hallucinations, where the models get it wrong. So I thought it's important just to spend a bit of time explaining this. It is going to be a bit technically and geeky, but that will give you a solid foundation to be able to go away and understand and have that dialogue with people when they're bringing tools and ideas into education systems. Next slide, please. So this is just a very high level recap for people from a few weeks ago. The main thing I always come back to on artificial intelligence is it's all just prediction. So just in the same way that we remember things that happened in the past, artificial intelligence systems learn from data. They recognize patterns and they use this to predict. And what this means is that it can create new content from these things. That's text, that's voice, that's images, which means that it can theoretically be applied to every task we do. So this isn't about sticking children in front of tablets and getting them to do adaptive learning, though there's a lot of potential in personalized tutors. This is about how we use these to upgrade our tasks. So I always come back to, what do we already do? We are education experts. We've been working in this field for a long time. How do we take this new tool and use it to make things better, to speed things up, to improve the quality, and to unlock new ideas as well? All that said, because they learn from what they've seen, if they've not seen it and they've not been trained on it, then it's going to be very difficult to get them to be good at that particular task. So the more they've seen and the higher quality of the data they've seen, the better they are. So when we talk about how we improve, a lot of these techniques are taking the information we already have, introducing that into these models, and then using that to get better, more accurate answers or more contextually relevant answers. So what this means is training data is super important. And for that reason, I wanted, next slide, please. I wanted just to talk a little bit about what we mean by data here, because you're going to hear this a lot and it's shorthand. And as I say, when we talk about data in AI, we have to think of it differently. It's not just numbers, although there is a trick to turn text into numbers, which we can talk about later. The way to think about data here is, if you think about data for improving a teacher and teacher support, then data is everything that the teacher might use to explain the lesson. So data is textbooks, lesson plans. It can even be the kind of mental notes on each child. So they'll be like, oh, Matt is really good at math, but she's struggling a bit with the language. Let me work on that as a stretch goal. So there's a lot of these examples which basically we use on a day-to-day basis in education systems, which are actually data. And that's the key thing. And this can come down to even how you discuss with children, how teachers respond, whether it's active or negative pedagogy. There's a whole bunch of different ways. So if you now step back a little bit and think about everybody that's involved in education, from the minister to the parent teacher associations, and you think of everything they use, the notes from meetings, the policy documents that have been written, the guidance notes in terms of how to implement a training course or teach fractions, all of that is data. And what this means is we've got mountains of data. So the key question is, how do we use it? So that's a bit of an aside, but I think it's quite important to make people aware that data now is text, it's images, it's videos. So just in the same way, that's what's coming out. That's what we need to think about, what's going in. So the question I think for people is, what data, what training data, what information do I have that can make these models better? And we'll come back to that in a moment. Next slide, please. So as I say, I wanted to just flag some kind of innovations, build on the framework we showed last week. I thought about whether I should put the diagram back in, but I didn't, just in the interest of time, but we can definitely show those slides. Next slide, please. When we think about innovations, there's a number of different lenses we can use to think about them. And within the initiative, we've gone back and forth on the best way to do this. And I think the key thing is just use whatever's best for you. If you think about it through technologies, think about it through technologies. If you think about it through tasks, think about it through tasks. For this one, we've started just doing our thinking and compiling innovations in groups of technologies, partly because I wanted to kind of highlight some of the shared potential and the public good investments that can be made in some of these open source codes in particular, which is very important to us for the initiative. I think the main groups of technologies are audio, so voice, transcription. There's going to be a lot of transcription of this meeting. Very, very useful. You can take that transcription, you can pass it through, you can cut it, edit it, and have 20 different, short videos from this, all powered by AI. You also have large language models like ChatGPT, which everyone's aware of. Image generation like DALL-E, and others. The potential for this is for input in, so images in. Marking is a classic example. Take a picture of how children are working on a text or they're working and pass that in, and then get the AI systems to use it as well. And then finally, just to recap, because AI is not that new. Predictive analytics has been around for a while. So there's a bunch of AI systems and models where people look at how children are performing, particularly on tests, formative or summative tests. And then they do analytics to say, look, if this kid is getting question two wrong, then they're less likely to pass the overall exam. And that enables us as educators to go in, see what question two actually is, what foundational skill or component it is, and build out from there as well. Next slide, please. So one of the things I'd say is we're seeing innovations across the whole spectrum. The thing which has been unlocked in the last 18 months is text. So one of the things that people will be seeing a lot of in terms of the innovations is text. This is creating new content. So this is, chatbots like Rory and Ghana. This information I shared last time as well, but just to recap. We also have a chatbot in Sierra Leone doing teacher CPD. Again, it's using large language models to essentially take a question and predict the answer based on various different systems and structures we can come back to. We're seeing innovations in formative assessments, so using AI to create exams. Huge amounts of innovation there as well, actually, for summative and formative. And we started off with a deeper dive in AI for assessment. There's some written on that on the website, people that are interested. And these models, I think, are getting relatively good at that as well in terms of creating text passages for assessment. There's also a bunch of stuff on lesson planning, and enable teachers to save time by planning out their lessons and content. I'll use this Old National Academy as an example of prompt engineering later. We'll come back to how you can improve, but there's also stuff going on here in Brazil and a bunch of other places. For images, we're seeing a bunch of innovation here. I think I mentioned Smart Paper. There's also one coming out of China where people are using image recognition to mark exams and mark tests, do it super quick. This is a really good example of how you can save time. If you've got 100 children in your classroom, which unfortunately a lot of people do in Malawi and Zambia and very low resource environments, how do you even mark 100 scripts? That's your weekend gone. And the European Championships are on in the football and the Cricket World Cup's on. So we've got better things to do than a lot of marking, but the children need it. So let's basically, how do we speed that up? These are some innovations there. The other thing to say, and I remember this, which thing is, people have been working a lot on equations. So equations for mathematics is a big challenge for AI systems. This is really important, especially for inclusion. So if you're trying to digitalize a textbook for children with visual impairments, the equations are vitally important. So if you're using AI systems to do this and you can't process and manage equations, then the children with visual disabilities are getting quite a bad deal. So there's lots of innovation here. Benetech is one which I've highlighted. They've been trying to translate the images in the textbook into descriptions, audio descriptions for the blind. So lots of a potential here for high-level inclusion. Next slide, please. Okay, so I wanted to do a bit of a deeper dive into audio today because we'll come into it. All I can see, you're always going to play your video in 1 minute. I'll tell you when. But this is just some examples. And when we say audio AI, voice AI, this is automated speech recognition, speech to text, or text to speech. So again, all of these things can work both ways. AI systems can take an image and interpret it, or you can give it an interpretation and it can create an image as well. So you have this kind of passageway, so pathway from text to speech, text to image, image to text, the speech to text as well. And this unlocked a lot of possible use cases in education, because a lot of the interactions are through voice. So especially for children when they're doing foundational literacy and numeracy, and for people that are aware of the kind of EGRA, the early grade assessment, a lot of this is based on phonics. So it's how children learn to read pre-literate. One of the challenges we've got is basically marking an assessment for children when they're pre-literate is quite difficult and it's really expensive because it has to be done individually. So there's a lot of innovation here in terms of work by the University of Western Sydney, Cape Town, Stellenbosch University, Banning and Straits Lab, Trachosaurus, to try and automate, the marking and the feedback loop to children's early grade literacy as well. So to us, this is very, very exciting. The other place which we're seeing, and this is mostly in developed countries because of the cost, but also some in developing, is you can record the interactions or teachers' lessons, which can then be used to give feedback. So if teachers, obviously with data privacy, if they give permission, they can record themselves and then get suggestions for improvements for their lessons in terms of tone, voice, accuracy, engagement, and other things as well. So we're seeing a bunch of innovations there. In terms of the text to speech, again, this is something which is very, very useful, especially for children who are pre-emerging literate or visually impaired as well. So you can get the read-along technologies, coaching videos. You can also scale translation in a number of ways. So you can take my voice, what I'm saying now, and you can translate it into any number of languages to basically massively expand reach and massively expand equity. And this can be used, as I say, for a number of ways. The quality of this is super high. People worry about this for deep fakes as well. So I'm going to get all of just play a video of two very famous Americans trying to teach math just to give an illustration of how this can work. Do you want to see if it works? No. Or is hovering over the video and it's not working. No, do you want to just scroll back? See? No, so here we go. Here we go. No, and now there's no voice, yeah.
Orla, you might need to reshare. When you click share screen, there's an option to say share voice, I think. You pause and then share
You
again.
did it. It's okay. You got it. There should be some kind of, we'll edit this out, by the way, so anyone watching on the catch up will look seamlessly professional.
Listen, differentiation, it means how much does the output of a function change as we change the input?
So look, if we go from here where x is 0 to just over here where x is 0.5, we can measure the slope by comparing change in y to the change in x.
So 0.25 divided by 0.
There you go. Thanks, Ola. Zoom back out. So I think, as I say, obviously President Trump and President Obama, having them together in a math lesson is the best use case we can find of voice AI technology, but it does illustrate, because that can be your favorite teacher, that can be someone from the community, that can be whoever you want with the technology that exists, and it can be used to explain stuff in a fun, engaging way. So that went viral on TikTok, and that will, you know, like get engagement for children talking about differential equations as well. So technology. Can you share the next slide, please?
Listen, okay. Different.
So, as I say, this is one of the reasons we like this, is because there's a number of the many examples within voice technology were one set of technology, be this, you know, algorithms to kind of take speech and translate it into text that's optimized for early grade literacy, can unlock a range of education implications. And one of the things we do at the initiative is try and spot these. So we're looking and working with people that are developing these open source voice AI technologies. There's a lot in South Asia and India and sub-Saharan Africa. And then we're saying, well, what are the use cases you can apply this to? So what are the tasks people are doing to do it? So some examples here are they're being used for teacher training materials in Tanzania. They're being used for assessment tools, whether that's the formal EGRE using Tangerine system or, you know, more informal formative assessment. And they can also be used for adaptive learning. So they can be used for play-based learning by Trackosaurus that do game-based learning, and also BookBot that do interactive read-along stuff as well. So one technology, three use cases, and probably many, many different applications which can be optimized for the final mile context. Next slide, please. Cool. So, as I say, and we're rushing through this a little bit just in the interest of time, we're seeing so many of these innovations appearing across a wide range of tasks that people are doing already. I should say it's actually relatively easy now to make or use an AI tool. But one of the things people are realizing is it's quite hard to get them right, and it's really hard to get them great. So I think I gave this example last time where we asked Claude, and this is all the same for all of the large language models, to do a lesson plan that's consistent with a curriculum in Sierra Leone and aligned to the standards. And one of the challenges here is because those standards don't exist, it predicted it would have, which is probably the same as any person that doesn't work there in detail, but it is a hallucination. So the one of the things we're seeing is people are discovering a lot of problems as they begin to use AI for education tasks as well. The overarching one here is the big models, and the exception here now, by the way, is Google's model LearnLM, which has been optimized for education, but optimized for global education, not optimized for education in Pakistan or Zambia or, you know, Cosmos or any of the other low-income countries. Another problem people are realizing is that because each system has its own content, curricula, guides, textbooks, people want to build on that. They don't want to start afresh. So one of the things, big challenges, how do we get our own content in? We'll talk about that. And there is also this hallucinations, which are a lot less than before, by the way. Like the number of incorrect answers is a lot lower than it was, particularly for the big models, but it is still there. So we are trying to figure out how do we solve this problem to make these models even more accurate. The good news here is that people are developing a lot of solutions to improve them. People, very active R&D space, including across our community. One of the key things people have been focusing on is how you grow this in your own content. Coming back to the very start, how do we get the training data we want and put that in? And we'll just open up for questions now, and then I'll talk a bit more specifically in terms of some techniques and key concepts for doing that. But just before I do that, let's just take any questions or clarifications so far. Siren, were there any questions coming out, or has anyone got any questions?
Not immediately from the chat, so yeah, feel free if anyone has any questions.
Can Anyone wants to ask any questions, just raise your hand.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course, yeah, please jump in.
This is Huma Arshad. I'm from Pakistan. I'm in the education sector. I'm an educationist and I am the decision-making position while I take decisions in my education institution. The topic is amazing. And when we talk about inclusion and AI, I think this is one of the most important area where we have to talk the most. So I'm glad to see that. But can I ask you one question very humbly? What do you think? How many of people or how many education institutions or big organizations of educational institutions are actually progressing rapidly above 80% towards achieving AI goals by convincing their teachers to adopt AI tools, not only for differentiation, but for regular classroom as well, not only for inclusion, but as a teacher for themselves too? How comfortable they are in it, the teachers. Thank you.
Yes, of course, yeah. And I feel that we're still in the experimentation phase for a lot of people. A surprising number, certainly in the UK, have used it or have heard of it. Obviously, when you get into more remote areas, that's not the case. I feel a lot of the innovation or experimentation at the moment is on an individual level, where you generally have a few champions who've tried it, who have had that aha moment, and basically are using it individually in their own work and their own kind of workspace. I think AI literacy is going to be huge over the next year or so, just to get people to know what are the key kind of principles. How do you use it sensibly? And we actually did a few training courses specifically for teachers in terms of how do you do prompt engineering? And that's something we'll talk about at a high level soon. But we did a training course and a note just for teachers on how do you interact with these tools when you're doing lesson plans or chatbots and so on.
Yes. Prompt engineering is one of the main aspects. If they are skilled and if they are trained enough to use prompts properly, I think they can use AI in a very effective manner.
Yeah. Yes, no, they definitely can. Okay, and we'll come back to that AI and literacy and inclusion later. One of the things we've realized is we put this in free sessions, being honest, because we're breaking for a few weeks on holiday, but there's so many possible different areas, AI ethics and safety and many things. You could have 12 sessions on this and still have massive content. Just quickly in terms of the questions, I saw a very good one from Linda, and we'll talk about languages in the next session because that's one of the exclusion inclusion things. So do languages play a role in AI access versus quality, English versus French versus Arabic versus others? It's a really good question. They are better in languages they've seen. So again, coming back to that first principle, have they seen this language? Have they seen enough of this language to be really good at predicting in this language? Something crazy, like half of the internet is in English. And a lot of these models are trained on the internet. So basically, if you think with that mindset, they're the best in English, second best in like French, German, high volume European languages that are on the internet. Then they're getting better in Arabic and Hindi and other ones as well. There's also a thriving research community to get them better in other languages. And then you have the very, very low resource languages where you literally have to get it to translate as you go. So we'll talk in further details about language inclusion and people working on that, because I think it's a really good one. It's unclear to me whether or not you should get AI models to be really good in every language, or if you should get it to be really good in English and then translate, you know, because translation AI is really good, you know. So Machine translation is a separate question. So you can do a two-step process, which improves quality. That's what colleagues in Mali found when they were experimenting with this as well. Anna Stubbs' question, can you do rag and fine tuning without knowing programming? I mean, it'll be quite difficult, so I'll be honest with you. But the market, I think, will solve for that. There's definitely going to be rag stuff without knowing programming. They won't be optimized, though, is the only thing. Like, it'll be quite easy to make one, which you can do a rag model, and we'll come into what that is. I would say that you would probably still want to optimize for education. That product doesn't exist yet, but is a global public good that someone might want to invest in, you know, CSF or others. Darlene, I can see your hand up and then we'll come back.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for the presentation. So I'm a UCL master's student doing education and international development. So we worked a lot with developing context, and when I research into like technology and AI in those contexts, especially in Cambodia, there seems to be fear from teachers, fear that, you know, like these tools are going to potentially replace them. And you start seeing government's policy almost not including teachers in the development of like using technology and AI. So in those sense, how do you mitigate? How do you work with teachers on opening up their willingness to engage in this type of tools in their teaching and not see it as an enemy?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think AI literacy is super important. And being clear the kind of world we're thinking about. Like, I mean, you do get some people who will want to replace teachers just for cost reasons. I think that's a bit misguided, because education is not just about delivering content. It's about socialization. It's about paternalism. You know, I would not want my child to be in front of a tablet or robot all day. I want him to be with a loving educator that looks after his other needs as well, you know. So especially for small children. So I think that it's about bringing them on board. It's about sharing what can be done. Again, it's AI literacy, ensuring the fact this is not coming to take your job. It's coming to make your job easier, hopefully, and kind of co-pilot with you as well. So yeah, I do think if anyone's designing AI solutions without going talking to teachers, then they're not going to be very good. They're not going to be very good if no one's going to buy them. So hopefully the market will sort that out, because you need to be working with the people you're trying to help. Otherwise, you solve the problem you have, not the problem they have. So yeah, hopefully that does it. Okay, we'll come back to, I've seen a few more questions in the chat, including promising voice video recognition. Let's come back to that. I wanted just to take a bit of time while we've got a captive audience just to talk you through some of the ways people have been trying to do things and introduce you to some key concepts. And part of the aim here is, as these terms get thrown around, empowering you in your positions in ministries or running programs to just say, I know what that means. When you're saying you're building a model, you're not building it, you're just doing prompt engineering, you know, like, so to be able to have that dialogue in a confident way and understand what's going on behind the scenes. So as I said, a few of the problems here is accuracy, but also it doesn't reflect the local context. So I wanted to talk through some emerging solutions as to how you improve models, but how crucially you use your own content in education, because people really want that. We spent a lot of time developing high quality content that's tailored, and we need to make sure that that's what we're drawing on for these solutions. Next slide, please. First up is prompt engineering. So, you know what, they always say, oh, 65% of jobs of the future won't exist. And I was always like, come on, most of the jobs don't really change too much. Prompt engineering is one where I was definitely wrong, in that, you know, prompt engineering is something which we didn't know about a few years ago. Essentially, and if you go back to what we discussed in last time, the way people interact with these language models is through a prompt. This is a string of text, like the cat sat on the, that the models are being trained to predict the answer to. So when you're going in and using language models, you're prompting them. That's a key thing to remember here. So prompt engineering or a prompt engineer is the person that writes that prompt. And why this matters is because, for example, for chatbots, you might see at the front a small prompt, but people will append to that prompt in the background to make it higher quality. So I always think here that there's different levels here. And generally with prompt engineering, the more information you give, the better. So if you just ask entry level, give me a lesson plan to teach fractions for grade four maths in Sierra Leone, you might think this isn't a bad prompt. I've told it I want it for grade four. I've told it I'm teaching in Sierra Leone. But that's not you as a teacher or, you know, as someone that's overseen teachers. That's not how you would do it if you were centralizing lesson plans. You'd have a look and say, okay, well, what are the key elements I want in it? What are the learning points for children to take away? What are the key words? Do I want a quiz? You know, do I want some activities? Do I want all this? How should it be structured? What is the language levels of this? So basically, where people get more advanced at prompting is where they start doing all of these things as well. And the key thing here is, if you think about working with these systems like you would a junior employee, so, you know, you've got a fresh graduate coming in, they're super, super keen, super happy to help. They just need a little bit of support. You'll be a bit more descriptive in terms of what you want them to do. So if you follow a similar mindset with prompt engineering, then you can get quite a long way, even with the core models as well. So as I say, the entry level here is just one sentence, you know, maybe a paragraph. The more advanced models is spell out exactly what you want and for longer. And a lot of the time people end up here and that's good enough for that task. Then I think for the people that are building products to fully automate this, you have what's known as, or what I would call, production level prompting as well. So next slide, please. And this is also a video. So this is taken, I mentioned, all national academies in the UK, their lesson planner. And oh, if you just go down to, I don't know if it, you can see it as a video. Yeah, you pressed it. So if you can see the prompt, I think is about 10,000 words. And it equally, you know, it spells out exactly what they want. So it tells it how to write a good lesson plan. It takes best practice in lesson planning. It takes best practice in how do you make a good quiz. It even gives all the contextual information you want as well. It passes through transcripts. It passes through previous lesson plans. It passes through previous examples of all the stuff. And then once it has that, it asks it to do it again and make sure that it's really got it. So one of the things to say and take away here is, when people say they're building AI solutions, quite often this is what they're doing. So they're really spending a lot of time on prompt engineering just to make sure that it is super clear exactly what is wanted from the text tool. This is really powerful. It's surprisingly powerful how much good you can do. And Anastup, in terms of your no-code solutions, this is a no-code solution. So you can get a lot of power just by becoming really, really good at prompting. Again, we shared some tips for prompting for our teachers. There's also a lot of stuff in terms of OpenAI. I've got prompt guidance, Claude, Anthropic have got cookbooks. There's a lot of really good examples of how to do this. Next slide, please. Okay, the next level up is what's known as retrieval augmented generation. So this is RAG models. And you'll hear about this again quite a lot. And generally, in terms of difficulty, it goes prompt engineering, then RAG models, then fine tuning, and then building your own foundational models, which is huge. So the way to think about this is, if you already have a database of the content you want, or your lesson plans, or a bunch of materials, and here we did the science of teaching materials, then you want to use these. So what you do, you put them in a database, you retrieve from the database what's relevant, then you augment the generation of the text with this. So that prompt, which you saw earlier, you'd pass back in information from your database. So when people say RAG, retrieve, augment, generate, you know, that's the three words it stands for. Just a bit of background here, because I say that, you know, like training data is all text and images and such. Generally, these are converted numbers using a technique, what's known as embeddings. And what this enables us to do is it enables us to essentially say which words are closest to each other, which means that when we're doing the retrieval, we can retrieve not just the words, but the ones which are semantically close. So, for example, king and queen will be quite semantically close to each other as well. And one of the big advantages is in this kind of semantic processing. So it doesn't just understand the word, it understands the words around that word, if that makes sense. So if you just look at this diagram here, basically each point, and the blue points are on, say, structured pedagogy, assessment, informed instruction, remediation, you can see that a lot of the stuff to do with structured pedagogy, they're using very similar words to each other as well. So basically, chunks that are closer together are very similar in meaning. So what you do is, and this I promise you will be the end of the really technical bit, is you stick these in your database, convert them to numbers, and then you search the numbers and say, give me the words. If someone's asking for maths lesson plan grade 2, you would search that vector space and say, give me all the stuff which is related to maths lesson plans and grade 2. And then you pass that back into your overall model as well. So that's retrieval augmented generation. We actually have code available, open source code, for anyone that wants to build this. It's all on the website. Next slide, please. Okay, the next level up is what's known as fine-tuning. And the way to think about this is when you're doing a RAG model, you're not changing the language model. So you're not changing the AI system. You're adding a different component to it. That component, by the way, can be searching the internet. You know, there's a number of different tools you can get AI models to use, and people are thinking about these. One of the things you can do, though, if you're doing the same things over and over again, you can fine-tune the models. So here what you do is you actually change the language models themselves and you create a different variant. So you, instead of using GPT-4, you'd use GPT-4/Paul's version. And then you call that every time. You don't change the vast majority of it. You only change the last bit to basically make it kind of fresher in the memory is the way to think about it. So here, an example is you take the resources you want to use, or for chat, what good examples are, and you do another training round, basically, to try and adapt the model to specialize on that. So to make this real, I'll give you an example of something we've not done, but we're going to do with our Teacher AI model. So the Teacher AI is a chatbot in Sierra Leone, which is being used by a bunch of teachers. It's in pilot phase at the moment. We've got about 50,000 questions from teachers. So that's quite a lot of information in terms of what they're doing. And what we can do is we can review the model and say, actually, can we make these answers better? So we've got 50,000 questions, we get 50,000 answers and better answers. And then what we do is we take this list and we say, look, take these, and the next time they answer that, answer this. So basically we give it all these question answer pairs and we fine tune it to prefer the new ones above the old ones. And the evidence here is that if your training data here for the fine tuning is high quality, you can get a lot of performance gains, and these compound over time as well. So for example, if you've got a million question answers, really specific, then you can really improve these models. So that is fine tuning. And again, this is a spectrum in terms of, you know, prompt engineering is the easiest entry level, then RAG is pretty good for when you've got information you want to keep constant, up to date. It's easier having that. than fine tuning every day or week. And then you've got fine tuning, where once you have a bigger set of information you want in, you know you're definitely going to want it in every time, then you lock it into the model as well. Next slide, please. Okay, so they're the kind of ways that people have been kind of thinking about improving the models. I think I mentioned this last time, but there's a few pieces of kind of digital public infrastructure, which we keep coming back to, which as a community we need to be aware of and thinking about. The first kind of key principle here is you need to make sure that you have good in and good out. The better the information we can provide as educators, any of the methodologies we discussed, the better the model's outputs are going to be. So there's a real public good, education sector-wide place of getting high-quality, machine-readable, open education content to really improve these systems. So if anyone's got any data or things they think is really high quality, it'd be wonderful to share that with the community as well. The other thing we need to do, and we've not discussed it in much detail, but maybe we will next week, next time if we have time, is we need to define what good is as well. And this relates to benchmarking in AI, where you essentially run, have a series of tests. Some of these relate to how good kids are, so models are passing exams. We are interested in how good they are at teaching children to pass exams as well. So we need to define what good is, think through models, benchmarks, tasks. This will be really important, especially for ministries and purchasers, to know that they're purchasing the highest quality models that's aligned with the kind of systems and structures. Next slide, please. So anyway, I just wanted to stop and summarize some what I see as kind of top tips on improving AI systems. I think the first thing to say is prompting is really powerful. Like, I very rarely do anything more than prompting in my day-to-day use of AI. And for a lot of people, that will be enough. And then for people developing AI products, they'll start thinking about RAG models and fine tuning and stuff. There's a lot of benefit from just starting thinking through the tasks you want to do. Again, really good at prompting. It's a really low cost way of testing your idea use case, getting that impression of how good these AI systems are going to be for what you want to use it for. Once you've done that, then you can think about RAG models, because this really does let you get your data in at scale. So if you've got more than a few documents, you do want to think about RAGs. So if you're trying to play the entire national curriculum, you're probably going to have to do that in a more automated way than passing each one through by hand. Then finally, the most advanced stuff is to fine tune. This allows you to further improve. This allows you to save money. And we've not talked about cost here, but you know, the more you put in, the more costly these systems are to use. So sadly, the better quality ones are more expensive. So we need to think about that cost quality kind of trade-off as well. Next slide, please. And I kind of put this in, I didn't know where to put it, but I thought I'd just throw it in before I finish, because a lot of people, I think, are a bit kind of like, okay, we've talked about AI, where do I start? And going back to, you know, what I mentioned previously, there's a lot you can do by prompt engineering. And I think the more people play around with these models and try out their use cases, the more, well, they'll just not be as scared of it, because they'll realize that, yes, they're amazing, but yes, we can't, the robots are not coming to take over. There's still a very strong place for high quality educators in this world and high quality people in policy making and such, but it can make us a bit quicker and a bit better. I always say that, you know, starting with what you do already and what you want to achieve is the best way to proceed. So I recommend that people think through, like, what do I do a lot that takes up a lot of my time? Is there anything I'm doing which I can think through and potentially co-pilot? And this will differ depending on your role in the organization, what part of the education system you're working on. The most obvious candidates here for AI support is the ones that are repetitive. So anything which you have to think really deeply about for like weeks before you get to a problem, AI is probably not going to be there just yet. Or you're going to need a really, really long prompt to be able to get it there. So the ones that are repetitive, don't need specialist skills, are really useful, especially the ones where you can document very clearly a set of rules for it to follow and process. So going back to the lesson plan, that works because what makes a good lesson plan? No. So it's a case of writing and documenting it. Anything where we can do that is a really good candidate for AI co-piloting. The other areas are ones which are really challenging to scale on your own. So you'd love to do more of this, you just can't scale it because of time constraints or other things as well. Finally, the other thing to be thinking about, and this comes back to the training data thing, is what data do I have? What information do I have as a ministry decision maker or, educator, program manager that I can use to append to these AI systems through prompting, RAG, even fine tuning if we get really excited, to make things better as well. And everybody will be sitting on their own information and their own data as well to help and improve. So it just might be that you've got, a set of training guides you thought were the best training guides ever that you produced a few years ago. Boom. See what happens when you use AI to co-pilot them. And again, I think starting with the tasks you're doing already is super important. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'm going to stop and open up for questions. These sessions always feel very rushed, like I'm talking too much. Next time, I want to talk about equity and inclusion. And I think, it doesn't need to be said from our initiative. We think there's a real risk that LMICs are going to get left behind. And we want to overcome some of these challenges. And I think coming back to it, languages, are you going to be excluded because they're in English and you don't speak English? Are you going to be excluded because you're not in the training data? They've never seen your textbooks. They've never seen your training guides. Are you going to be excluded just because of costs? So these things can be quite expensive. A GPT Plus subscription is $20. All of them are $20. You can't afford that if you're earning $100 a month as a teacher. Are you excluded because you've got no internet? Talk you through some of the stuff we've been doing with Beaky on taking stuff offline. Digital literacy, are you excluded because you're just a bit scared and no one's going to hold your hand and help you get through the initial uncertainties of using the tools? Finally, disabilities, we really are pro inclusion here, thinking about how you can use this as well. So next time, I think I'd like to take a bit of time just to talk about how we overcome these challenges. If we've got time, we'll also talk about ethics, data security, data privacy. There's just far too much going on, so it's great to have these opportunities to share this thinking with people, and hopefully you've enjoyed it. Anyone got any questions?
There are a bit of a clarification questions in the chat, Paul.
Cool. Any in particular, Sarah? No, I can scroll through. Prompt injection. Anna Stubb, I think. So Anna Stubb's from CSF, who we also chat to a lot in terms of their AI use cases. So prompt injection is something which people worry about a lot. It's where basically people try to jailbreak or put in illicit material into prompts. So when you're typing, people try to break it, get it to behave in different ways. The really advanced ones and teachers do this, by the way, or professors, they hide stuff in white text. So then when it's copied across, you can't see it, but they can. So people can use this as a technique for good and for bad as well. So prompt injection is essentially where people are trying to hack a lot of stuff. Actually, that's my interpretation. Anna Stubb, have you got a different interpretation? Or?
No, I saw that in Oak Academy. Is when you were scrolling through the Oak Academy thing, I saw prompt injection go by when you're scrolling through that mega prompt. So I was wondering why they had prompt injection in there.
That is a really good question. And, you know, John, because this is a challenge. They could be using it to just as a holder for where they inject a prompt, or they could be using it as a safety to protect against it. So I know all national academies do a lot of work on AI safety. One of the challenges actually is education use cases are a really, like, really good way of doing basically getting them to break tasks, because you say, oh no, I don't want to do this bad thing, I want to have a lesson that avoids it, and then you get stuff on it. So it could be a number of reasons, to be honest. Like, I see prompt injection as a malicious attack that could be the safeguards, because this is a production level prompt. I should say, for people that are interested, on their website, all of their AI prompts are publicly available. They also have a tool which takes this automatically. All of it is open source, publicly available. One of the things we're thinking about is, how do we take this model and then make it so, obviously, that's optimized for the UK, that can then be used in Sierra Leone or other places, you know? So how do we internationalize best quality? Yeah, I'll ask him though.
I have a question, may I?
Yeah, of course, yeah, jump in.
Okay, this is Uma, but I've already asked one question. Currently, when ChatGPT 4.0 is also there, and ChatGPT 5 and 6, they are saying are on their way. So what do you think, what is the best platform when it comes to education or when it comes to teachers? For example, people are using Copilot. I am very fond of Copilot. I really like it. And so what do you suggest? One more example. For example, once I tried to create a coaster on Copilot with the ChatGPT 4.0 2 weeks back, and there were a few mistakes in that poster. So I was like little taken aback, because I have to be very careful right now when everything is in the transitional phase. So what do you think, what is the best platform right now, user-friendly for teachers? All are user-friendly, but the best one for teachers.
So thank you. In terms of the larger models, I mean, people are interested. Hugging Face, keep on leaderboard of large language models. One of the things we're trying to work on is to figure out, what does it actually mean? When we say, what is the best thing for education, what does it mean? Generally, the big models are just better. So GPT-4 is very, very good. Claude Opus 3.5, which was released literally yesterday, is my initial ones this morning, is fantastic. Google Gemini 1.5 is great, but a lot of it depends on the use case. So Google Gemini has got a really good long context window. You can put in a million tokens. If you're translating, that's very, very good. Generally, I would say, basically, of the free models, I've got to say, I don't know, because we've not done a mapping of the free models.
Was asking. Yes, I do use Gemini as well, but the most user friendly which I have found is Copilot and ChatGPT-4, which can read the room as well. So obviously, it must be better than anything else.
But I think one thing to say is, the more we can be clear about the use case, the easier it is. And we're working on benchmarks, for example, you know, like, which are the best at Socratic reasoning? So explaining to children how you do it. Which are the best at pedagogical subject knowledge? All of these benchmarks, which is how you judge, you know, that's the score you get, that doesn't exist for education as of yet. But yes, you're right in terms of the user friendliness, the generalist models. Any of the big providers I like, I always go back to GPT-4, although increasingly I like Opus. It feels good. But for a production decision, it's very, very different. One of the things over the next 6 months to a year is we need to get better at answering that question based on education-specific tasks.
And the most satisfying thing is, right now, currently, when just turn it in and all these softwares, when they have inculcated these things as well, that they can detect AI material or ChatGPT based material as well. That is to some extent satisfied for us as a researcher too. Why? Because the thing is, few months back, everybody was just talking about this. Okay, there is no need of the researchers when everything is through ChatGPT. They can just put it and then Turnitin cannot find it. But now Turnitin can also find it. That is the best thing. Simultaneously, the policies for AI and simultaneously, we are growing towards AI.
Yeah, and I think that assessment in the age of AI is a big question. Like, some of these, like, we can detect AI is, you know, like, how accurate are they, you know? Like, so I think it's a really big question in terms of the quality of this stuff. Anastab, just in terms of your question of the open source LLMs good enough, especially to use document uploads to process. So, I mean, Llama is probably the best of the open source ones. Again, there's an open source leaderboard on Hugging Face, which shows for specific tasks as well. Open source is not free. For the best for kind of document uploads as well, Gemini gives you the longest context window, but might not be the best for others as well. So I think, again, it's a lot of stuff, but it feels like we do need to, as the initiative, start forming more views on the kind of public access ones. We've been relatively neutral today because we've tried to say, think about the exact task before you pick what's best, you know? Abhijit, and then I think we're going to have to wrap up today after this one. Abhijit, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much for the session. Just before I ask my question, will there be a recording also be shared about the session later on?
They definitely will. We'll share the recording and we'll share the slides. For last week, we can share the slides and the voice transcript. We don't have the two together, but we'll definitely circulate those.
Okay. Also, my question is, while you are sharing about these different LLMs, I think with Gemini, what I've seen is they advertise it has a high context window, but it seems to lose track of the conversation very easily, like compared to GPT or Claude. I think it's mostly between Copilot and Gemini that I end up using. So from like, if you look at, building lesson plans or activities, which ones would you suggest which have like a better reference or which are, which hallucinate less with, minimal prompting? So that we are able to build lesson plans very easily, because generally, like a lot of it is, sometimes I feel like the knowledge shared or the output is hallucinating as well. So that's something that I'm looking for some ideas.
Yeah. So I think in terms of the, my impression of the categories of models, the big, big models, GPT-4, Allpurse, Gemini, all pretty good. There's a test, by the way, called the needle in a haystack test, which you can check for how good the long context window is. But I'm with you, like there is a sweet spot where you're just giving it too much information and it forgets, just in the same as the human would. I think that a good prompt, so the returns to having a 2,000 word prompt as opposed to a 1,000 word prompt, I think will be higher than the returns from swapping for GPT-4 to Gemini, for a lesson planning app. And I've not got any evidence on that. That's just my gut instinct. If anyone's got time to test it, I'd love to test that theory out and just see. Actually, maybe this is one for any of the builders. But my instinct tells me that a better prompt will get you a lot further than just swapping models within that category of model. The step up from 3.5 to 4 is huge, So 4 with a bad prompt is better than 3.5 with an amazing prompt. But across the models within the same category, I think prompt engineering improves so much more. Yeah. So we're going to have to do the hard work of getting our prompts really well, really good. But fortunately, because we're all education experts, we're going to start with what we're already doing, start with what we already know, use that to develop really good prompts, and then integrate the other materials through RAG or fine-tuning. Okay, I'm just conscious of time because I've not had lunch yet and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm going to break, get some lunch. Thank you to everybody for joining. The best way to connect with us, if you follow us on LinkedIn, also send an email. I think if you send it to the support@aiforeducation.org, that gets to us. We are very happy to have these conversations. We've got one more training session after this, but then depending on demand after the holidays, we can always have extra ones. We're going to do coffee chats on voice AI for deeper dives. We're very happy to host and have these conversations as well. Maybe one thing we should do if people are up for it is have one final session after the break, which is a lot less lecture. And a lot more discussion. I feel that maybe that could be quite good as well. So we'll keep in touch. We're building the plane while we're flying it. So any feedback is welcome. Okay, thank you all for joining today. Have a great weekend.
Okay. And we'll see you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.